my past sins. Despite the short notice, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it might be opportune for me to introduce some members of the team, because they don't regularly come to Parliament. Perhaps I will allow everybody to introduce themselves, starting with the head of my office on my right.
Of the portfolio committee. My name is DG Gosnell. I'm supporting the DG in the office of the Director General.
Thank you very much. My name is Musi Matotera, the Director General of the Fund.
My name is Vuyo. Now I'm responsible for legal services in the department.
Morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Veronica Mafuko. I am in the Intergovernmental Association of Chief Directorate that deals with the implementation of the Municipal Property Rates Act.
Morning, I'm Sijika Manyika in the Intergovernmental Chief Relations Section of the Department.
A very good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Lebohan Tekan. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Suan Isaac. I am from Parliament. I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Okay.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. Morning, Department. My name is Christopher and I'm from 7-8. Sorry, Chair. I'm from 7-8.
No, it's not the media company.
No, it's not the media company, Madam Chair. It's a monitoring group just as BMG.
And I'm Stevens from BMG.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. With abject humility, we would like to apologize most profusely for not following the rules in the manner you've described it in going about introducing this bill into Parliament. I trust that this is a mistake that shall not be repeated, and I'm doing so looking at our Parliamentary Liaison Officer through the corner of my eye. Madam Chair, this morning we have prepared a presentation which takes the style of an explanatory memorandum which purposes to explain the policy considerations behind the bill. We are not as yet presenting to the committee the clause by clause, but rather we are walking the committee through the park, indicating what sections are being amended and what are the policy considerations behind each amendment that's being proposed. The committee is aware of the fact that we are currently implementing the 2004 Act, which has been in operation since 2005, and that based on our experience in implementing the 2004 Act, we have gained certain insights, and what we can say is that we are quite happy with the quality of legislation that the 2004 Act is. But of course, that there are certain areas of it that require strengthening. The presentation that we will give will indicate to the committee the areas of transparency in property valuation. We'll also be focusing on matters relating to the monitoring role of provinces. We'll also be looking at the regulatory environment, which empowers the minister to, in a sense, firmly regulate this environment on property rating. You will also see in the course of the presentation that there are certain exclusions that are being proposed, which are considered to be in the national interest. So we hope that through this bill, we will be able to secure what is generally referred to as the general revenue stream, income stream of municipalities, because municipalities gain a lot of income from the property rates that they levy against property owners, and in so doing contribute towards the economic ability of these municipalities. Ms. Mafuko is going to walk us through the presentation, and once she's done, the whole team lined up on the side of the table will be happy to take any questions the committee might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Thank you to the chairperson and honourable committee members for having us here this morning to outline to you what the Municipal Property Rates Amendment Bill is indeed about. I must say up front that this bill has been long in the making. It has been on government's legislative program for a while. However, it was delayed because when the bill was published for public comments, we received quite an extensive number of public comments. We received over 7,000 public submissions in respect of this bill that we had to consider. That showed us the level of interest that is out there amongst members of the public and interested parties on property rating and property valuation. And this keen interest is there because property rates is really a tax that is very, very visible, and it's close to the hearts and minds of people. It is not the kind of tax like income tax where you don't necessarily see the income, that you don't receive the income first and then get taxed on it. In terms of income tax, you don't actually see the tax income. You get the after-tax income. In terms of property rates, you receive your income and then you still have to pay the tax out of your disposable income. So it's at the heart of any property owner's, it's at the heart of every property owner. Hence, property owners are very interested in what municipalities are doing around valuations. We've had a number of comments around whether municipalities are valuing property correctly, whether municipalities are rating them fairly, and so forth. So we introduced this bill to you with that full knowledge, and this bill is meant to correct a number of the implementation challenges that we have picked up over the number of years that this Act has been implemented by municipalities, so that we correct these, so that some of the challenges do not come up, so that we don't have outcry from property owners that we have been having over the number of years, and to also support municipalities and strengthen this Act such that they're better enabled to implement it correctly. I'm going to go into the presentation. Basically, what we're going to do is tell you why we're what the purpose of the presentation is. We'll give you the background on why we're amending this Act. We'll tell you the exact consultation process that we undertook as far as this amendment bill is concerned. And we will also give an indication of the revisions that were made to the bill following our public comments process. We received public comments, and there were public comments that we that resulted in us revising the bill, because those comments were appropriate and they and felt that they would strengthen the bill. We will also give an indication of why this bill is a strategic. Some of the reasons around that I've already spoken to just now. The purpose of the presentation really is to brief the Portfolio Committee as it has requested us on the critical provisions of the Municipal Property Rates Amendment Bill 2013. As we have indicated, this bill seeks to address implementation challenges that have emerged since the implementation of the Act
since 2005, as has been said already. We would like to make the act simpler. It's a complex act to implement. A number of municipalities don't necessarily have the capacity to implement it the way that it is because of its complexity. And we want to strengthen certain regulatory provisions in the act, certain monitoring provisions, and certain reporting provisions so that we know what exactly is happening in terms of what municipalities are doing around property rating, so that if there are any problems, these can be corrected timeously before they become too big of a challenge. By way of background, I'm going to give a short background around what the Municipal Property Rate Act is about what the view is about that act currently, which is leading us to make these amendments. The act commenced on the 2nd of July of 2005. The main objects of the act really are to regulate the power of a municipality to impose rates on property, also to exclude certain property from rating in the national interest, and to make provision for municipalities to implement a uniform, transparent, and fair rating system. Our view is that in the first phase of implementation of this act, it was indicated that the original objectives of the act are sound. There are no problems with the objectives of the act, and they laid the foundation for equity, fairness, and transparency in the property rating system. It was also observed by the department in the first phase that there were certain implementation challenges really that warrant a review of the act so that we can address these implementation challenges, and by so doing we want to simplify and strengthen certain aspects of the act as already said. Now, what is it about this Municipal Property Rates Amendment bill that we're putting before you now? The bill seeks to provide for, firstly, regulatory clarity and certainty. Because in our view, there were a number of implementation challenges that arose, and these implementation challenges resulted in some regulatory uncertainty, which is something that we would like to correct at this stage. We would like to provide for more effective monitoring of what municipalities are indeed doing as far as the rating of property is concerned, and as well as the process of valuing properties is concerned. We think that these are key issues that are emerging from property owners and from communities out there. So we want to put in provisions that more clearly monitor those aspects. It is the act, in the Act, it is the intention that these provisions are monitored. However, these provisions that should be monitored as far as rating and evaluation are concerned are not here, so we want to make those specifically clear. We'd also like to provide for reporting by municipalities on the area of implementation of the Act. Currently, there are no key provisions in the Act, such as in the Municipal Finance Management Act, that provide for municipalities to regularly report on exactly what they're doing as far as property rating is concerned. So, the department, the ministry, as well as even Parliament, we are a little bit on the back burner around key information that we need to know about what municipalities are doing around property rating and valuation. This seeks to correct that. We would also like to exclude certain types of what is called public service infrastructure from rating in recognition of their developmental role in our country as well as their economic role. We would also like to correct certain issues around the definition of agricultural property by including game farms in the definition of agricultural property because it is deemed to be fair to include it there. What we also seek to do is to extend the period of validity of valuation rules from 4 years to 5 years. In addition, there are a number of technical amendments that are contained in the Act, which are quite broad, but these are around the everyday implementation aspects of the Act. What we're going to discuss with you at this stage right now are the high-level amendments. Technical amendments you will see when you go clause by clause at a later stage. So we will touch here mainly on the key policy amendment and the high-level amendments that I have just mentioned. We'd like to take the committee through the processes that this bill actually went through. It's gone through extensive processes, including consultation processes. Certainly, it was approved by Cabinet in 2011 for publication, public comments. As I said, we received over 7,000 public submissions. All those were considered, and the bill was revised accordingly. We must say that the bulk of the public submissions were technical in nature, because the bill is largely a bill that deals with a number of technical issues. So it the public submissions resulted in a number of revisions that were also largely technical. However, certain public submissions resulted in revisions to the bill as published that changed two policy positions. So two policy positions were changed following the receipt of public submissions. I will clarify what those two policy provisions are later in these slides. The bill was then approved again by Cabinet on 12 June 2013 for us to submit to Parliament for its consideration, which is why we are here. It was certified legally sound and constitutional by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. In terms of consultation, the bill went through extensive consultation. It began with public hearings, which were held by the department and the ministry in all nine provinces in 2010. As I said, the bill has been coming for quite a long time. At these public hearings, various stakeholders were invited, and various stakeholders actually did attend. These are the stakeholders that are listed here. They included agricultural unions, individual ratepayers, ratepayers associations, community-based organizations, business and mining representatives, state-owned enterprises were also there, municipalities were represented, practitioners. They were also representatives of traditional communities that we engaged there. They made submissions which were formal, and some were made at the public hearings verbally. Furthermore, in addition to these public hearings, we consulted a number of state departments and constitutional bodies around the substance of this amendment bill. As you can see, those departments that are listed there, Treasury, Transport, Agriculture, Education, Environmental Affairs, Public Enterprises, and so forth. We also consulted the Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa. We also consulted South African Local Government Association, or SALGA, the Institute of Municipal Finance Offices, which really includes municipal practitioners largely, which are municipal CFOs and municipal managers. Municipalities also consult, and provincial departments who are responsible for local government, including the National House of Traditional Leaders that we also consulted. We did consult the SFC, or the Financial and Fiscal Commission. We have to, in terms of Section 229 of the Constitution. They were consulted before the first submission of the bill to the Cabinet, as well as after that, when we wanted to submit the bill to Cabinet again for a second time. We contacted them about that. Now, I'm going to get into some of the key aspects of the bill that we would like to discuss with you this morning. Our view that the revisions to the bill that you should note, which are quite high level, is that we had, following the public consultation process, we did have it, and following that, the department felt that we needed to remove a couple of provisions. One of them was we had proposal to exclude certain aspects of the market value of property owned by recipients of older persons grants and disability grants. We wanted to have that to protect who the persons that we deemed were poor from excessive rating. However, public submissions and other opinions, including from the Chief Legal Advisor and elsewhere, pointed to the need to remove those. One of the key reasons around that, which is a technical reason, is that the state is moving towards universal access to the older persons grant for all pensioners, regardless of what their income is. Currently, there's a means test that is used for that. However, as the Minister of Finance has already announced, we are moving towards universal access. So retention of that proposal would unfairly benefit wealthy pensioners if we retained it. As the system currently is, it would benefit poor pensioners, for example. However, now that they'll be removed, it will also benefit wealthy pensioners. So it is not deemed appropriate any longer. If there's a concern around whether poor pensioners and the disabled and persons who cannot afford rates, whether they are being protected, municipalities are, through their rate policy, granting significant rebates to those persons in any regard. Hence, we don't feel that there will be a significant overrating or a disadvantage towards those persons. The second key issue that we revised as a result of public comments were the revisions that we had proposed to amend Section 8 of the Act. Section 8 proposed a property categorization that was deemed too prescriptive on municipalities, that municipalities felt that it was too prescriptive and it was taking away their authority to determine property categories. What we did around that is that we revised that approach and we softened it such that it is not as prescriptive as it originally was. However, we had certain objectives around that specific amendment, which we felt even if we revised it and softened that approach, we would still be achieving the objective that we originally wanted to achieve. The reason that we softened it is that we wanted to allow for a degree of municipal discretion around determination of property categories, so that they can determine certain property categories that are unique to their municipal area. However, we still want to determine certain property categories, as you'll see in the next couple of slides, so that we can better regulate the rating of those property categories. In the next five slides or so, I'm going to actually go into what exactly the key amendments that are high level and of a policy nature that you should note are. The first one is the proposal to exclude certain public service infrastructure from rating in the national interest. Our view is that the rating of certain public service infrastructure, such as roads, railways, airport aprons, runways, dams, and breakwaters, in our view, it can compromise the economic and developmental objectives of the country. If they are overrated, it is our view that the owners of these public service infrastructure may cut back on the investments that they make in these public service infrastructure, and we know what will happen if not enough roads are built, not enough dams are built, and so forth. It will impact on the economic sustainability of the country and on some of the socioeconomic developmental goals that we have. Hence, we are proposing to exclude those public service infrastructure from rating. This is not a big bang approach that we are taking. We are phasing out exclusions over three municipal financial years. These are the only public service infrastructure we're proposing for exclusion. It doesn't mean all public service infrastructure will be excluded from rates. There are other public service infrastructure which municipalities can still rate. What is the impact? Our assessment shows that public service infrastructure constitutes less than 1% of estimated property rates revenue for municipalities at the time that we did the specific study. So public service infrastructure does not constitute a very significant portion of municipal property rate revenue. The next key amendment that we would like you to note is that we would like to tighten property categorization to strengthen the regulation of rating. That is the amendment that I talked about just now to Section 8. Our view is that Section 8, in the manner that it is drafted currently, it basically results in the regulatory authority of the minister being undermined. As I indicated, the provision was revised following consideration of public submissions. Our view that we are amending Section 8 to strengthen regulatory provisions, to strengthen the regulation of property categories. In certain instances, it is necessary for the national minister to to regulate the rating of certain property categories, either to protect them from overrating, or to assure that the macroeconomy is not compromised. There are certain properties like that. For example, we know that the agricultural sector in this country is a significant contributor to employment, especially in the rural areas. So although they must pay rates, agricultural property owners, we wouldn't want them to be overrated. So certain of those may need to be protected for that reason. So currently, as Section 8 is drafted, it allows for municipalities to escape that regulation. Section 8 is too open-ended. It allows municipalities to determine a wide range of property categories which can allow them to, if the minister regulates a certain property category, they can theoretically determine another property category to undercut that property category that the minister is regulating. Therefore, the minister's regulations then become ineffective, and that class of property category then becomes overrated, and the objective of regulating it then becomes null and void. Our view is that these provisions are in the interest of promoting macroeconomic stability because they can limit excessive rates on key economic sectors of the country. We also feel they can assist with effective monitoring and transparency in property rating if we actually implement those specific provisions. The other provision that I spoke about is that we are trying to strengthen reporting by municipalities on how they're implementing property rating and valuation in their various municipalities, so that we can provide for more effective report and intervention where necessary, if there are municipal failures. Currently, the Act as it stands, it does not contain sufficient monitoring and reporting provisions. It is the intention in the Act, which really is a one-liner, which provides for this. However, that one-liner is not clear enough to guide provinces, for example, around what exactly are they supposed to monitor. It just says the provinces must monitor the implementation of the Act. So it's not clear about what exactly about the implementation of the Act should be monitored. So all that these provisions are doing is making it clear what about the implementation of the Act should be monitored. It also provides for reporting by municipalities to MECs so that the MEC can also see how municipalities are implementing the Act according to the issues that have been outlined. The provisions also provide for the national minister to receive reports from municipalities to also better monitor what is happening with the implementation of the Act. This will help to catch municipal failures quickly before they become disastrous. There have been a number of municipalities that have failed in a number of areas as far as the implementation of this Act is concerned. A couple of years ago, municipalities actually failed to begin preparing valuation laws, for example, in terms of this Act. And that required that we extend the period of validity of old valuation rules by an extra 2 years because they were failing. Now, if we had these monitoring and reporting provisions in place at the time, there wouldn't have been that need to actually amend the Act to allow municipalities to do that. We just want to catch municipal failures in time, hence we're providing for these amendments. We then want to extend the period of validity of the valuation rule to 5 years. It is currently 4 years. Our view is that it's not feasible, nor is it cost-effective for certain municipalities to undertake general valuations every 4 years. A number of municipalities have indicated to us, we have seen in monitoring, that a number of them do not recover enough of their investment in the valuation role over the 4 years provided. Hence, it's deemed that perhaps they may need more time over which the valuation role should be valid. So what we're doing is we're extending the period of validity of valuation role to 5 years. We're also allowing for the MEC for local government to be able to extend it by an additional 2 years on the basis of sound reasons, obviously. Currently, the MEC can only extend it for 1 year. This is not something that will result in all municipal valuation roles being necessarily long. Those municipalities that can prepare valuation roles every 4 years or within this time, they can still continue to do so. It will only be those that cannot do that that will use this specific provision. The next issue that we are amending is that we feel that the definition of agricultural property is not as fair and equitable as it should be. We are providing for the inclusion of game farming in the definition of agricultural property because we have found that game farming uses the same resources as farming that is viewed to be conventional uses. Hence, to continue to exclude game farming in the definition of agricultural property could attract litigation, and we feel that we wouldn't want to attract that litigation. So we feel that it's fair for us to do that in the specific bill. This amendment, though, as we know, certain game farms do have what you call hotels or lodges on them. It doesn't mean that if a game farm is considered as agricultural property, that those portion of those game farms that are used for the hospitality of guests, such as lodges and so forth, it doesn't mean that those will be considered as part of the agricultural property. Those will have to be sectioned out and considered as business properties. So it doesn't mean that those lodges will benefit from the agricultural consideration. So that the act, as we are in the bill, the amendment that we're making, are taking that into account. Chairperson, I'm at the last slide now, and I'm sure you would like to know why this bill is so important, why I would like you to consider this bill. It is our view that this bill is strategic. Our view is that as this act gets implemented over time, municipalities begin to rate more and more property. They begin to, the uptake of properties being valued and rated actually increases, and more people are being brought into the property rate net. And the more people that are being brought into the property rate net, the more vigilant they are about what they're paying for, what exactly is being valued, and so forth. So you will find quite a lot of interest from private property owners, repairs organizations, and others, and you'll hear a lot of outcry around that, around whether this act is actually being implemented as effectively as it should be. These amendments are meant to, amongst others, ensure that some of those things we are seen to be dealing with them and giving property owners the comfort that when they pay rates, they're paying it on a fair basis and that they pay it on the basis of a fair valuation. That is a broader, what I would say, strategic importance around this specific bill. As I said, we want to strengthen the national regulation of rating to ensure that the macroeconomy is not compromised. That's another reason the bill is so important. The Reserve Bank does speak about the fact that administered prices, which property rates is a part of, are increasing rapidly and they need to be kept under control. The provisions that we have provided for in this bill will go a long way to ensuring that property rates are not going through the roof, so to speak, so that the regulation of rating is done so that they're not as high as they could be or as irresponsibly implemented as they could be. We also want to strengthen accountability by all the spheres of government around the specific act through effective monitoring and reporting provisions, as I said, and these will help us to detect municipal failures early. Lastly, we'd like to deepen transparency in respect of property valuation and rating, which would improve the trust of property owners. It's our view that it will do that, particularly the growing middle class, whose rates represent a key and an important source of municipal funding. I thank you.
Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, presentation. I'll now invite members for comments and questions. I recognize Honourable Bonhomme, Honourable Stienhazen, Honourable Boinama, Honourable Machima.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for a beautiful explanation about this property bill. There's a lot of it that worried me before, but you have cleared a lot of my concerns. One of the major concerns I've got is that there's been communication and interaction with all bodies except in churches, religious, other faith groups. Now, I'd have to have a follow-up question after I ask this question. Is that, does these churches, religious faith, do they pay rates? And how are they rated? Because according to my understanding and my interaction, a lot of these churches have become business orientated, and a lot of legal action takes place around them. Even with people involved in illegal activity, they go to a lot of these religious groupings, and they do their money laundering through them by stating that they don't tell me where the money comes from, but just give me your money. If you want to give it to me, and a percentage will go back to you. Now, this is that kind of thing taking place. Now, you find that these religious groupings, the members of the church contribute 20% or 10%, whatever it is. But you find that the minister and his wife will be getting Mercedes-Benz or four-wheel drive cars on their birthdays and for gifts. Now, I notice all that there, and to me that's criminal. You know, and that's because you're a church that don't get involved in criminal. These things do happen. Now, I want to know exactly how all these churches or religious or faith groups rated, if they are rated. And after your answer, I would like a follow-up question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Just at the outset, I mean, I think you could battle to get away by getting this appointment in the 75, but I'll leave that for the lawyers to hammer up, and it's got significant impacts and inferences for provinces, so I think we're very optimistic in the route you're going. But nonetheless, you may remember me, I'm the gentleman from the Portfolio Committee trying to get hold of you. And the reason was I want to discuss with you Section 52, and just understand why there's been no amendments around that particular section, because I know it's causing a great deal of unhappiness in municipalities and for residents with the requirement that it has to, the 10% up or down has to go to a valuation appeal board. And my understanding, my interaction with some municipal head of rates department is that was specifically looked at, and there were supposed to be some amendments coming around that, but I didn't see it in the amendment bill, so perhaps you could just understand why that hasn't taken place. I would just like to understand from you, Madam Chair, what do we do now with this bill? I mean, do we now get to make further comment into it? Do we get to move amendments? If so, is it done in this committee? It just seems that there's been a huge amount of interaction taking place with everybody in the country in this committee. And, I must say, I find that rather odd and actually quite problematic. I want to place on record my dissatisfaction with that state of affairs, because this is the Portfolio Committee. We're now being given this bill and told, now hurry up and get this thing done. And yet we're brought in right at the end stage of the process. And I just really want to say that it's not our one cooperation with this committee, then you need to give us the respect that we deserve, so that we're able to take requests like this seriously. But this dump on us, in the dying days of a term, is just really not a satisfactory state of affairs.
I think I would agree with you. In my introductory remarks, I just made mention that the procedures and the process of bringing the bill before the Portfolio Committee was not followed. It came in a later stage, but it has already been submitted to the Speaker's office. Hasn't been having a bite like any other. It started, according to the presentation, long before 2011, this amendment. But as a Portfolio Committee, if you can check in our minutes and our records, we've been asking bills that are in pipeline from the department, nothing we received from the department. I just concur with you and agree with you that if next time processes in the department wants processes to run in smoothly, I even mentioned on record that if our program was tight enough, we were going to even reject the bill and take it back to the department as a Portfolio Committee, because it hasn't gone through right procedure. outside it has been consultation, as we heard from the presentation, but we can't even testify where are those consultations taking place. Presentation showed that many provinces have been consulted and the stakeholders are listed there, but then the portfolio committee and the edge was supposed to process the bid. We are not certain, we cannot witness that. That's the concern, which is a big concern, but in my introductory remarks, I've appealed to members that let's accept the bill maybe and take it to the proper procedures until the finalization of the bill. But take a note, the DG has also responded that it won't happen again, but if you feel there are a lot of technical issues, and the issues in my input at the last, there are some omissions that we need. In this exercise, in this time of the bill, interaction of the bill, we're supposed to do it before it has been tabled even in Parliament. I recognize Honourable Boyinamo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am four square with Honourable Stian Hazen that we as the committee cannot be used as a rubber stamp. The bill is brought before us when it has gone through all other stakeholders, and we should just pass it. And I'm saying that we cannot do that. We need to reject this bill until it follows the proper channels, Chairperson. And I've got two questions here. The first question is, of the 7,000 public submissions received, how many were for the bill and how many were against the bill? And those who were against the bill, what were their reasons, the reasons that they put forward? And when rating properties, did you actually look into the rather take into account the already highly priced commodities such as water, electricity, and of course properties themselves are very expensive, in order to ensure that you're not overburdening property owners and drive them out of the urban areas? I know of people falling in this category of teaching profession, nurses and police, who cannot afford to pay rates, electricity and water in urban areas, and they are moving out, particularly out of the towns as compared to townships. They'd rather go and live in the township. It's better, but it's still expensive. So since this new dispensation, it has become actually luxury, you know, to live in town per se. So I don't think in a democratic dispensation, people should be denied to live where they want to live by pricing the commodity so high that without looking at what they are earning, so as to afford them to also be able to enjoy the places they want to live in towns. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I really share the same sentiment as your opening remark and all what Honorable Stevenson has just alluded. But maybe one would be really, I don't know, to be critical, to be saying that one would want to know when are the stakeholders, when and where were they consulted. And I will really want to know when you talk about community-based organization, because to me it is such a big, I may be sitting here thinking of what they may be implying or maybe referring to, almost crime is not what it's been referring to. We become part of community and community representative, public representative, and these are some of the things which we should really take to our community to understand. Now, if we are getting it now,
while it already have been dealt with, and I really want to know where, because I'm part of the community and I don't even have an idea when was it like tabled to the stakeholder. Thank you, Chair.
I think the sentiments already have been raised around processes. My question that I want to raise is there's been wide public participation, one has been looking through this, but that doesn't absolve the processes and the public hearings that Parliament is supposed to have on any piece of legislation that goes through Parliament. One of the clauses that it is a bit niggly with me is the issue on the one of the persons who receive pensions from older pensions and people with disabilities. We often find, and I think the DG will also bear witness to this, people who receive state pensions, how do we deal with people who just fall out of the bracket of qualifying for a state pension? We want to encourage people to be self-sustaining and to have their own property and to be property owners. That's how we go into the whole issue of RVP housing and so on. Now, is there no way that we can deal with in this piece of legislation people who are elderly but who just fall out of the category of qualifying for the pensions? Yes, this goes to the municipalities, and municipalities have policies in place. Somewhere also picked up that there are some municipalities who don't have policies in place to deal with this. But I think somehow in the bill it should be addressed. Because at the end of the day, we encourage people to be self-sufficient, self-sustainable. We want people to become property owners, to be able to eventually pension themselves when they're no longer part of the workforce. And then you have this penalty of property rate taxes. So how can we deal with people who just fall out of that category? Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, mine will be short because I've been covered by my colleague. But you have heard the list of as it is with this problem. The question I'm having, what was the motive for the department not to follow the right procedures? Because they knew very well what the judge was supposed to do. There is a motive behind not to follow them. If you check now, they've consulted like community-based organization. In your definition, what is the community-based organization? In your definition. Of course, my son and his wife can open up and come alone and use one of my rooms and place my office, and then write the plan of the system and the submission. As if now there are people who are watching the course. If the consultation is the problem, if now at the last, we must just have a seminar now. We're not part of it. Starting from 2004. 2005, 2006, up to now. Now, at the end of the 2013, now, the portfolio, we shall support the whole parliament and the rest of this, of which we think we must do now. If we can start just now, what must we do as portfolio committee? Otherwise, no problems go to the consultant of 7,000. That's like my job, pass the bill in parliament. No, but anyway, this is because of some loopholes. Which we leave them the check. What must we do now?
Thank
Thanks. Honourable Stan has a mental health right before I...
Something I forgot to amend. We can actually commit to, we are empowered to call for further public hearings if we want to, my understanding. So, you know, I'm certainly not prepared to take what's been, you know, to go, well, this is a stakeholder that we did. We don't want to. I would like to understand myself, it's my duty as a legislator to interrogate those elections, to have a look at them, and to actually see that they have been encapsulated here. If I had to do so, I'm neglecting my duty as public representative. The second thing I want to say, I would just have some further motivation from the department around the extension of valuation roles. You know, we moved to a system of market value. And as you well know, market values fluctuate on a very regular basis. And we, you know, many people, when the last valuation was done, the property market was at a high. We all know there's been a depression on the property market. And my worry is that when you extend the valuation role and you give MECs the power to extend valuation roles, and you're giving municipalities the power to extend valuation roles, that you then run the very real prospect that a municipality will try and avoid the downturn in the property market and use these clauses to keep these rates at an artificially high market value, when in fact the rates have been rated are not the market value. So I would be saying the department should be actually encouraging municipalities to conduct far more regular valuations so that you then end up with an accurate and realistic set of market value, rather than relying on an artificially extended period. Now, I would just like to understand if there's been any modelling done around that, and if so, could we have the methodology and the results of that?
First, to HM, and then on your slide 9, when you have said now about the elevation, that you are saying now why do we have to leave that to the municipality to determine whether the rebate will be, they will give us some rebate or so. There is why maybe one municipality may want to be rigid and say, no, we won't give them the rebate if you just leave them to them there. And also on our slide 14, when we say propose amendment to limit the problem, but in the end, you said, this does not prevent any municipality it chooses to prepare the new general evaluation role within 4 years. It doesn't. So you see, that was it just leaves the that. It will depend. It says it does not prevent any municipality if so chooses to prepare the new general evaluation role within four years. That means it will depend to the municipality. If maybe you can elaborate more on that. Okay, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, really, to tell that because we are sitting in a limbo here, situation. In the sense that we are discussing something which has been already approved by having it on the 12/14/2013. I'm sitting here asking myself that, as Honourable John Stein has already ended, that this will be taken back for consultation. I'm asking myself that how it would be possible, hence it has already been approved by the government. Thank you.
That is the correct procedure. Department heads are supposed to take that route. And also a contribution from Honourable Stein in the form of a question. Is that yes, at the portfolio committee level, as soon as the bill has been introduced before the committee. So it takes 4 weeks in advertising the bill for comments outside the community, 4 weeks, and we invite for public hearings. We take the submissions, we deal the normal way that we do procedure, we bring the bill. That one it's aside. It doesn't take away, because I was seeing officials from department when you raise that, the portfolio committee's procedures, they're saying that it's up to us, we're supposed to do our own hearing, but it remains the fact that the bill hasn't gone through correct procedures to come before the committee. I repeat again, the committee is supposed to be briefed. According to the committee's program, I can draw all the programs of the committee. There is a list and the slot whereby we've been asking the department to brief us according to the list of legislation that are on board. Some of them, the days we received was last in terms of introducing them to the portfolio committee.
And on that day, I don't want to dwell much on the past. The kind of questions that you are asking that maybe we, the procedure was not correct. At that time, we were receiving responses of saying that you must have a separation of powers. But on a separation of powers, you must use them when you know that you don't want to have a smooth working relationship. But if you want to have a smooth working relationship, you don't dictate or go back to the list of separation of powers. Because according to the department understanding, when maybe listening to the reaction when we do our input, is that you just did your procedure, your consultation, you are not even needed. Every time we make EE law, EE plea from the department that as members of parliament, you've got constituency offices. You've been conducting your consultation processes in our constituency offices. That's why I say we cannot even witness where were you doing those things, because we've got constituency offices whereby we've got constituency areas where we are deployed to monitor. At the end of the day, we passed the legislation. It will be challenged, and we're not going to satisfy how far have you gone with your consultation. It will be challenged and go back to us again. So that's why we said, as much as the separation of power, you said maybe when you take it as if you are not needed, even in your consultation process, the very same thing which is happening now with the Traditional Affairs Amendment Bill. Each time you get a response, you are told it's outside the public consultation, of which now we are not staying in this town, we are staying in areas down there. We haven't seen those consultations. We want to see those consultations and testify and come here and speak about the things that we know we've seen. As much as the two separation of powers doesn't need us there, but at the end we have to process something that we've seen. That's the issue of the matter. But your input, Honorable Voinamo, we agreed in principle that we'll continue with the bill but raise the very same issues. We'll hear then, because if you check parliamentary program, the legislation on traditional affairs is on pipeline outside. The moment we finish here, we'll be obliged then to come back and entertain that legislation again. That's a problem that we face again, as we are doing it now. If we were having not enough time, we started our BRR processes according to parliamentary program. The internet entertaining this bill was supposed to take us in terms of taking our constituent period and come to deal with the bill. Because it came in late, and according to parliamentary procedure, our program is very tight. We are busy with BRR reports. So we were clever enough in that the bill is on our way. Let's take our BRR report even before we arrive for constituency period to start with SALGA and other state entities so that we open space for this bill. So I mean to say that we don't want to foresee for next time to work in like this. We must be informed about the bill, even if you haven't gone through all the processes that are there, so that you'll know and timely you want to put it in our slot. Surely, DG, this exercise we were not going to have time to do it. That's when we'll be having an excuse of saying that we're turning the bill away because it's rushing. Even NOP, it's saying bills that are coming this time, we must process them very fast so that they will be able to rise. We rise and leave them here and busy processing late coming bills. So that's the procedure and the processes that we are talking about that needs to be taken into consideration. Having said that, I just also want to check, according to the presentation, has the bill specified that, according to the presentation we received, only the type of property rates where it's permissible to a levy rate or a uniform fix, is there any uniform fix standard of the price of the residential property according to section 11-12? Of the principal base. And also, I think when we do research or studying the bill, we foresee that it has been omitted to specify whether the risk policies must be determined the criteria to apply by the municipal if it increases rates, when that is referred to section 3 of the bill, of the principal act. Members have contributed in terms of pensioner, which you mentioned too, they are rich and poor pensioners. I just want to check, is the bill clarifying the procedure on which, on how the municipalities must determine those rich and poor pensioners in terms of exempting them in their property rates? Let me just, I'll come in for, after maybe response. Did you?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It might be a good idea just to clear the air. I'm going to have to ask our parliamentary liaison officer to shed some light from our side as to exactly what is our understanding of the process. One thing that's very clear, which we will not deny, is the fact that we came in very late with this bill, way beyond the, I think it was the 7th of June, which was the original cut-off time. And I think that, secondly, it would have been a good idea, even as we were busy with the preparation of the bill on the executive side, to share some information with the committee, so that the committee can anticipate what is coming. But I'm troubled a little bit, Madam Chair, by the fact that the committee seems to suggest that, at least from the comments that have been made, that it was not appropriate of the executive to go on a consultation process such as it has done.
No.
Almost, yes, but give me the opportunity to comment. Almost as if public consultation is the exclusive procedure of Parliament. The executive has as much right, and in fact an obligation, to consult with the public so that when it comes to Parliament, it says we have done our consultation. And by so saying, we're not saying Parliament should just take what we say for gospel, and that Parliament shouldn't conduct the public consultation process. No, certainly not. In fact, we would be very worried if Parliament would want to accept what we say. The consultation process from our side has brought to us. We would still expect Parliament to do its bit, but equally the executive has as much right to do the consultation process. But Madam Chair, from the point of view of not preparing the committee in time, we accept that we have not followed the procedures. We assume without much proof, just by a straw count of the comments that have been made, that the committee, regardless of us having come here as late as it is nonetheless willing to help us work through this bill based on its importance. Not for the purposes of the executive, rather, but for the good of the country. So that, Madam Chair, as I said, we accept that. We will make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes. We will convey to our colleagues in traditional affairs, in respect of the traditional affairs amendment bill, that it would be good for them not to wait until the bill is introduced into Parliament for them to start interacting with the committee, so that the committee can already know what it is that it must ready itself for. So, Madam Chair, I will pause there. Le Brun, I don't know whether there's anything you would like to say on process. If you don't have anything to say, Madam Chair, I will defer to the resident experts in the department to tackle the questions that have been posed. Mr. Mahipia, Mr. Mapopo, and
okay, I will start. The colleagues will be coming either to amplify some of the matters I shall have responded to, or those which I may have inadvertently omitted. I think the first set of inputs which came around the issue of churches, based on the fact that you have some of the overseers of the churches, for example, in the Christian Realim pastors, who appear to be rich, and all those related activities. There are two things. There is the Income Tax Act on the one hand, which deals with the taxations of income which people, citizens of South Africa receive, and this particular act does not deal with the issues of the income or benefits which members of the public, whether they are overseers of religious formations, that belongs in the arena of the Income Tax Act. And the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance deal with those. So we are not, based on the separation of what local government is, national is, we don't deal with those particular matters. And we won't even try to speculate as to what those particular provisions are to deal with those particular concerns which have been raised. Also, I think even issues which relate to issues around money laundering. What we can say in terms of the Municipal Property Rates Act itself, because we deal with the issue of ownership of property and the tax which is imposed, which is what we call municipal property rates on that particular property, is that what we have excluded, or what, let me say, not what we have excluded, what Parliament itself has already in 2004 excluded from rating is what is called a place of public worship. So the business activities and all those related things are not covered. If you look at Section 17, it excludes from property rating ambit places of public worship. So if religious formations own businesses and all those particular related activities, those are the things which the Minister of Finance through the National Income Tax Act needs to deal with those particular related issues. Now coming to Section 52, why is it that we have amended that particular section? And Section 52 is of the Act is the one which says that if the municipal valuer makes an adjustment to the property value, which property valuers have objected to, if it's more than 10%, either upward or downward, it needs automatically to revert back to the Valuation Appeal Board for it to make a decision. Now, let me say two things on that particular arena. The fact that property valuers have been opposed to that particular section of the Act is not a new thing. Right from the beginning in 2004, when the Act was put into place, they never wanted that. So nothing has changed in that particular regard. Now, where we stand as a department, our position as to why that particular Parliament is sovereign, it can make any whatever decision, and I don't think we will fight about that, because that is what Parliament itself can decide. But what is our motivation for not taking it out up to now? Because even in 2004, they never wanted it, even now it keeps on coming up. It deals with one particular issue. At this point, when Parliament put that particular session in 2004, it was to give property owners, to some extent, comfort, a level of comfort, a degree of comfort, that given that even if people don't trust the quality of valuation which municipalities have, so you can't have a municipal valuer being a player and a referee at the same time. That is what that particular section was to do. Because if somebody objects, you yourself, you change the valuation of that property by more than 10%, then it may say that there is something which you haven't applied your mind well in the beginning to start with. And that is where the issue of giving property owners comfort that all the things need to go to the Valuation Appeal Board was coming from. That the Valuation Appeal Board, as a matter of must, it needs to look at the thing, either to confirm or not to confirm. But then the issue is, if at this particular point in time, that particular requirement is taken out, like I said, that is the issue which we are just taking our reason and Parliament is free. The fact is, from where we stand, people, they have got distrust about municipal valuations. Now the strategic question which has to be answered is, if we take that out, will it deepen public transport, public trust in municipal valuations? Because if you look at some of the things which make people not to like the issue of property rights, it comes back to the fact that they got issues around valuation. So that is one arena as to why we haven't proposed any amendments, because even now as we're going around, the issue of people not having trust, and it also cuts across even some of the things we read in the media and some of the comments once in a while which we get from members of the public. That particular issue which that section was trying to address still exists as of today. Now, the issue of, yes, indeed, we received close to about 7,000 public submissions. The question which was raised in this regard is that how many were for the bill and how many were against and all those. I'm not so sure my colleague will also, Veronica will also come in here, but I'm not so sure that whether it will be easier for us to go over those 7,000 public submissions we received to say we start, because the way we were looking at those submissions, it was only section by section or clause by clause. In this particular section, who are the people who raised issues of concerns and what were their reasons? Do we agree? And if we don't agree, what is our reason? And there are two documents in that instance which the Policy Secretary has already requested, which we have already provided last week. One of it, I think it goes to close to about 200 pages, which was listing. If you take a particular institution, like for example, the Institute of Municipal Finance Officers, what are the issues that they were raising? But subsequent to that, we said, to make it easier for Parliament, let us come with an executive summary. We came with another version, I think it comes to close to about 18 or 20 pages, which goes clause by clause to make it easier to take in clause one. These are the general thrust of the things which were coming out, and these are our inputs. So that is the approach which we have taken. But we have taken into account all the issues which we raised. But so that is what we can say about that. And it is clear what is it which they had and what our responses are with respect to that in those documents. Now, I think the other issue which has been raised is, I think it comes back to issue of pricing. I'm not so sure if I got it well, but I will leave it that if some of my colleagues got it clear for us to respond to it. Now, going to the issue of pensioners, and it is true that we got rich and poor pensioners. Now, there are two things here. What we're trying to do with the provision in the bill which was published for public for public comment in 2011, we were trying to come with a nationally imposed kind of a level that if your property is up to this particular level, part of it, it should not be raided. And that is what we have withdrawn precisely for what she has already indicated that what we're looking at. That system is going to fall off by 2016 as the Minister of Finance has indicated that we're going to a universal system where people will be recipients. So when you look at issues like benchmarks, it will become problematic. But having said that, the general thrust of Section 3 of the Municipal Property Rights Act itself, it says municipalities themselves, they need to adopt rate policies. And these policies themselves, they need to be inputted by members of the public. So there is an issue of public participation there. And some of the guiding principles there, which are in that particular section, is that the issues it says here in section 3, subsection 3, subsection F, that the rating policy must take into account the effects of rates on the poor and include appropriate measures to alleviate rate burden on them. So that guiding principle is already there in the Act. And we think, despite what I have said, what we're trying to do, that appears to be a better way to deal with the thing. Because you've got the country being vast, you've got rural-based municipalities, you've got metropolitan municipalities, so an issue of differentiation starts cropping into the system. And it starts saying who is better placed, because we may decide at a national level, it creates problems on the ground, but those residents in that particular municipality, they themselves, because they input into the rating policy and all violence-related issues, as to what is appropriate at that particular level, and again, what complicates it, like it was well articulated, property prices across the country vary based on where you are. If you look at metropolitan based municipalities and the secondary cities to a greater extent because of the active, of the existence of the active property market, because you've got a lot of this selling and buying of properties, which also is part of the things which also drives the prices, except the fact of whether they are services or not in those particular areas. So, but when you go to rural-based areas, in certain instances, to a greater extent, properties don't change hands very often. If it changes hands, it's by way of donation to some extent. So if you come with a national framework, it starts complicating things. But even there, in your rural-based municipalities, the residents of those particular municipalities and the councillors there, they are better placed to know what is it which is reasonable without us creating a complication. Now, the issue of the extension of valuation rolls, and it links up to what was correctly highlighted in slide number 14, which said that this does not prevent any municipality if it so chooses to prepare a new general valuation roll within 4 years. The Act at the moment, as it allows municipalities to have a valuation roll, which can be valid up to a maximum of 4 years. So what the Act, as it stands at the moment, governs is the upper level, that valuation roll should not exceed 4 years unless if the MECs provide an approval, that approval is 1 year. And even now, for example, you see the city of Cape Town, it has been over the last two previous occasions since the implementation of the Act, gone for a three-year cycle of this valuation roll, because based on whatever is happening here in the city of Cape Town, you've got a lot of people who are buying properties, including foreigners and all the things, and taking into account this fluctuation in the market prices of properties, for them it makes sense to manage the things well. And that, we are not interfering with it. We are right here, even with this amendment, because the local dynamics in that particular area had to govern what is it which is appropriate. So you can't say you want a 4 year or 5 year fixed throughout the country because the dynamics changes. If in the city of Joburg something happens there, they should be in a position to deal and react with that particular aspect in a matter of flexibility. We are not taking away. Like the colleague has indicated, our concern here was primarily if you look, for example, at your rural-based municipalities, and they have raised issues that you go out, you spend money on the compilation of valuation rolls. Now, there is no free lunch. This money, which is an expenditure outlay, one way or another, you need to get investment out of it. You need to get the income. So if you go the 4 years, based on the property prices in those particular places, then it is not affordable for them. So all what they have, if I have spent, for example, 20,000 to compile a valuation roll, now because I'm limited by four years, you find that all what I'm able to collect is something like 10 years. Now you sit with that discrepancy. Now at the end of the 4 years, you want me as a municipality again to go out and compile another valuation roll, which I'm not going to get anything. So that is where the reason of extending the period primarily was coming from, to make it 5, and that is the reason we said the MECs, if there are reasons, they can make it 2. So it allows for the principle of differentiation, because your metros, based on what is happening there, they will be able to move shifty. But those which require a longer time horizon for them to recoup the expenditure which they have already incurred in compiling.
For clarity again, you said the initial the principal act of 2004 is saying 4 years, then the amendment 5 years, and for MC was 1 year, and the amendment is 2 years. So what is the rationale behind that? It's of amending those years, it's because of the submission received or evaluating the implementation of the law 2004, where the municipalities were unable to implement the laws, and you know, input in your response to saying valuers are not trustworthy, is trusted by property owners. I just want to check whether are these questions or concerns raised through submissions being answered to the amendments that are there. What amendment speaks to correct the non-implementation for those municipalities who were unable to implement the Act? The amendment are going to make them be able to implement the Act, and also fixing or determining prices for the property rate. It will bring trust to the valuers. Yes, we understand that there is a board that you made mention whom they can interfere and lodge their complaint. And also in your explanation you said some of the amendment makes the evaluator not to be a referee and a player at the same time. I just want you to expand on that one.
Okay, on that one, where it comes from, after the first phase of implementation of the Act, liaising with our provincial counterparts, we wanted to get an understanding as to whether municipalities are able to generate funding. That is where it comes from. And what we got from the provinces is that in particular rural-based municipalities, it becomes a challenge, taking into account the kind of example I was already providing. And I think when we went to KZN, Veronique, I think there were one or two municipalities actually which came also with their own to explain the same kinds of things that it is. So that is where we were coming from. So it is coming from our monitoring and engaging with our provincial counterparts as to whether municipalities are they able to recover this cost which they have already incurred upfront. I don't know, before we move, Veronica, on this one, you want to add something so that we close the thing can come later.
Thanks. Chairperson, just to add, we have been monitoring over, since the commencement of the Act, how municipalities have been implementing the Act. One of the key features or issues that comes up all the time is municipal failure around the issue of being prepared, firstly, to implement a valuation role, the next valuation role, firstly. There are a number of failures. Quite a lot of municipalities in different provinces have failed to do this. And one of the results of such failure, by the way, is that there must be a Section 139 that must happen in that municipality. We have had those failures, we've engaged with provinces around them, and obviously we all know that Section 139s are quite unpopular to do, and having to undertake Section 139s in each and every municipality just because they failed to prepare a new valuation role for various reasons. Some of them are capacity. Municipalities don't all have the same capacity. Yes, Cape Town as a metro can actually prepare valuation rules every 3 years. That is because it has the capacity to do that. Others have the capacity to implement GVs every 4 years. Now, the ones that we've picked up, and it's the majority of rural municipalities, as he has indicated. Now, because it's unfeasible to enter into the municipality when there's a failure through a 129, which is the only avenue that the Act allows currently, it just doesn't bode well for municipal administration, firstly. Now, the extensions are done on a sound basis. The Act already provides that when you extend, there must be sound reasons and so forth. So our view is that we need to give municipalities scope and space to be able to firstly generate the capacity they need to generate to prepare valuation roles as regularly as possible. We would all like to see that. However, they also need to be able to prepare valuation roles that are credible. Currently, because of these failures, a number of the valuation roles are deemed not credible by property owners. Hence, we felt the need to make this amendment to extend the period. Yes, we understand about price fluctuations and so forth, which is why we have also provided, as the chairperson raised now in one of her final comments about Section 3, about the increase or decrease of rates. So a lot of these amendments speak to each other. They're all linked. Section 3, we are providing for municipalities to provide a criteria for the decrease in rates. The reason that we have introduced this amendment is so that currently they can only provide for an increase in rates. They cannot decrease rates for any reason. Now, our view is that when you prepare a new GV, property prices change. Sometimes they may go down, sometimes they may go up substantially, given what the economy is like. So this decrease in rates is also assisting to ensure that when the next GV cycle comes and property prices have increased
quite a lot incremented, which we've seen here in Cape Town and in other parts of the Western Cape and in other provinces, that the municipality is able to decrease rates, because when property prices have increased substantially, you need to decrease the same amount in the rent. You don't need to keep increasing it. But that was just responding to that question and giving you the link. But the reasons around this, around municipal failures based on capacity, firstly, and the failure to recover what they have spent on valuation rolls from rates in those specific 4 years. They're not able to do that, especially in rural municipalities. Thanks, Chair.
Well, just one last part on this particular aspect. Well, it is true that in the app as it exists, the MEC, they were provided with one year. Why now increase it to two? It's because we have realized, because most of all these amendments were basic and based on the lessons we have learned. If MECs decide to intervene, because first we try to support, but there have been weaknesses, and hence we have built up the issue of provincial monitoring and reporting by municipalities to provinces so that the things are picked up easy. But if it comes to a crash that an intervention is required, if now we've got 1 year, it makes it difficult, because sometimes you need 2 years in order for a proper valuation role to be put in place, which is credible before the members of the public. So that is the reason we have increased it from one to two, so that they don't rush through this process. And at that stage, it brings the entire government into disrepute. It's one thing if it is done by municipalities on their own. But when people come up and complain about the quality of something which was done emanating from a provincial intervention, then that is where we need to guard against some of those things creeping up. And that is the reason we are making it 2 years, so that something of quality comes in. But I'm done with the issues I wanted to respond to.
You want to come in?
I just want to come in on that, because the department makes some very good points around, particularly around capacity in rural municipalities. But essentially what you are doing is giving a metro a power of fixing rates for 7 years, if it wants to. So, no, it's good power for an extension on the MEC as well. You're giving the potential for a metro to go 7 years without doing a new DV. And I just think that's unacceptable. And I think that perhaps what the department should have done is rather looked at categorization of municipalities and said that, and perhaps at different periods for category B and C municipalities. But I'm telling you now, if a metro is unable to get a GV done every 4 years, then I think there's something wrong with the department, that it's not monitoring municipalities. I mean, it's a basic function of local government is being able to raise its own revenue stream and taxes. And, you know, a municipality that can't get a GB together and to get a valuation roll together is a municipality in crisis, I'll tell you that. Because you can't start providing for your income. You know, I don't know how you're going to go around spending it. But, I mean, I'm really unhappy with the fact that you could potentially push us out for 7 years. So a municipality could rely on 1 year or 2 years of really good property prices and ride that out for 7 years, when in fact it's an artificial, the property market could collapse, but if we kept that artificial level for 7 years. I think that's problematic.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just wanted to with humility, remind and remember Sian Hayes that now that the bill has been introduced in Parliament, it is now the property of Parliament. You may not be satisfied with the reasons we've given you. You have every opportunity to determine what is it you do with the bill, including effecting changes you consider desirable. It is now the property of Parliament. The executive has done its bit. Parliament can run with it, it can change it as it pleases. Of course, it will also have the opportunity to hear what the public has to say. Thank you very much.
Our today's exercise was just
a point of clarity, madam. I just don't understand what that is.
I just want to respond on your behalf. Today's exercise is just to listen to the amendment and get clarity why you propose such amendment. Then we're still going to go back and sit down and work it politically, policy-wise, constitutionally, and agree or disagree with yours. But today, we want to scrutinize and understand why is this
proposals from the department. Do you want to comment?
I don't understand the intervention. I asked a specific question. Was there a look at banding in different categorisation of municipalities? Was the question relating specifically to this? I understand my role as a member of parliament. I understood it when I got it.
And also in that issue of saying that, can you please maybe if you go back, we look at our site, saying that because it has been raised, listening to the amendment, one, we were trying to assist those rural municipalities in terms of extending the years, but at the meanwhile, we were giving the metros a leeway to extend the fixed rates. We just want to check and evaluate the impact on that one. We're still going to come around the table and discuss those issues. Then you may continue.
One last point, Provin, is just on this particular issue, then the colleagues, starting with Veronica, will be coming in. On this particular issue, let me quickly just read the relevant section of the Municipal Property Rights, so that is section 32, subsection 2. It says that the MEC for local government in a province may extend the period for which a valuation bond remains valid to 5 financial years, but only if the provincial executive has intervened in the municipality in terms of section 139 of the constitution, which we have already stated that one. Number B, there is an emphasis, so that is the reason I'm reading it. It says that B, on a request by the municipality, comma, in other exceptional circumstances which warrant such extension. So it's not just merely because a municipality applied to the MEC agrees. First, the municipality has to satisfy the MEC that there are valid exceptional circumstances. And at the end of the day, the MEC has to make the decision, taking that into account. So it's not an open-ended kind of a process. So that is what, so when we look, and I get the point that the committee or parliament may wish to agree with us across the board, but we also need to take into account that the Act itself, it limits what needs to happen. So it doesn't give the municipality and the MEC all this freedom to do as they wish. There are conditions. So, but then the colleagues will come to either to amplify some of the things or to deal with some of the issues I have not covered. Thanks.
Thank you. Chairperson, I'm going to try and deal with the issues that Mizi didn't cover. I think he covered quite a lot of ground there. Just on the first question around churches, religious faith groups and all that, and how those properties are, I just want to add that Mizi is correct about those exclusions. We also have provisions in this bill around those specific properties to make it clear what is included in the definition of a place of public worship, just to avoid the situation where municipalities are taken to the cleaners, where somebody comes and says this is a church when in fact there's a business going on there. There must be public worship taking place on that specific portion of those properties. If any other portions are used for anything else, and municipalities go and they inspect these properties because they have to. When they value them, they have to inspect these properties. Any other portions that are used for anything else, whether it's a bookshop or selling whatever it is that is being sold, those portions are not going to be considered as places of public worship. Also, they must be owned by the religious group's properties. We also understand that there are properties that anybody, I can own a property and I can rent it to you if you have a church. Because that property is owned by me, who is not a registered organization of public worship, the Act already has these things in play that says these properties must be owned by religious organizations. So a property that's owned by me that is rented to you on a Sunday will not be considered in this regard. All of those issues are already in the Act. And all we're doing here, by the way, we have clarified those issues so that municipalities are not paying for a ride by any fly-by-night in that regard. So you can have comfort around that specific area.
Can I then interject there? I'm coming to you. I just want to check also. Then the church and these processes of worship maybe on Sundays. And there are some other businesses like taking into consideration places whereby they can use it as a hall
by the community. They can use it as a social place where they practice their arts and the like, where they can use it, maybe NGOs, women doing their that categorizes as a business center. Then it changes the whole notion of that is the church, it's the place of worship. Before you...
I don't accept what we said, because it's just quite open for corruption. The loopholes are there laughing at you. And that is happening now. I would say that the churches are taking, not all churches, but I know many are taking the tax man for a ride and taking the municipalities for rights. I know exactly. Now don't come and tell me that there's a place of worship. And because of the place of work, they get treated separately and got away all the homeowners. They were making more money than the homeowner. They're making more money than the man strictly as a carpenter or bricklayer or pusher or wheelbarrow. They're making more money. And that money is going into their wife's pocket, the children's pocket. They send their children to Australia and all over the world, buying the wife four-wheel drives and then getting Mercedes every year. Now, don't come and tell me that you're blind to corruption. I do not accept. And I would further like to take it up with the Income Tax Act with the Minister of Finance, if to say the situation remains the same as this.
Chairperson, the Act provides that the place that is being said to be a place of public worship must, for it to be considered under this exclusion. Firstly, they are excluded from it if they are places of public worship. They shouldn't pay rates. It must be used primarily as a place of public worship. So it must be used primarily for that. If there are other activities, the municipality will have to use its discretion around how it categorizes it. So that is the issue. On the other issues that have been raised, as Nizi has already indicated, those issues are outside the ambit of the Property Rates Act, because the Property Rates Act deals only with the property. Other issues are around income taxation and so forth, and it would have to be looked at from that specific perspective, Chairperson. We can't respond to the specific issues here, because the Act, we're not within the ambit of the Act, per se. If I may go to other issues that were raised which have not been responded to. Chairperson, you asked about Section 11 of the Act, the issue around the uniform fixed rate. I'm not sure if I understood you correctly. Were you asking if the uniform fixed rate is only for residential properties? If yes, if that is the question, the answer is yes. The uniform fixed rate is for residential properties only. That is the amendment that we have made. Our view is that, and it is quite clear that the legislature or parliament, when it passed the provision back in 2003, the intention was for it to be for residential properties, because it's more likely for residential properties to be of a low value, which will then require that a uniform fixed rate be determined. It doesn't assist to have a uniform fixed rate for a business property or any other, because those properties, firstly, it's simple to determine the property value of those properties. There are certain residential properties where it is not so certain how to determine some of the valuations for those, and perhaps a fixed rate is required. So yes, it is for residential purposes only. All that we are doing here is making it clear that it is for residential purposes, so that there is no ambiguity about which categories of property it actually applies to. I think...
I don't understand it clearly. You mean a residential fixed rate in houses whereby maybe there's another... I'm asking this question out of no knowledge or distinction to differentiate between the two. There are residential places whereby there are flats, whereby there is a business running there and there is income. There are residents whereby it's my house, your house, your house, your house, your house. Is the rate fixed, meaning that it's fixed to those who are running businesses, residents, for businesses or residents for private ownership?
Okay.
It is meant mainly for low-value residential properties, meaning properties largely, as we all know,
the government has implemented a housing program, a number of RDP houses could possibly come into the net. Now, in those areas, or in any other area where it is difficult to determine market values, for example, previously disadvantaged areas, it may be pertinent or appropriate to determine a uniform fixed rate around that. That is for those kind of properties. It is not for properties where it is not difficult to determine a market value for that property. And the municipality, anyway, will exercise its discretion. Where it is easy or possible to determine a market value as the Act requires, the valuer will determine that market value. Where it is not, for the properties that I'm talking about, they are allowed to set a uniform fixed rate. And that uniform fixed rate will be based on something that is determined at a national level.
Okay. Can I also add something here? I think there are two aspects which is impacted by the proposed amendment. First, there is a valuation aspect part of it, where at a national level we may say that for properties up to a particular market value, let us say which their values are at 70,000, less than 70,000. As a municipality, rather than going for the principle of putting a cent amount in a rent, then you can come with the notion of, for example, that you pay 30 rand. That is what this particular section is meant at dealing with, because the general approach of the Act, except when you come to this particular deviation, is that you got a market value, what you do? Then you come with a cent amount in the rent which will apply across the board. But what this section has done is to say that for those types of properties, then you can allow people where you collect the rent, so it's no longer. So that is what this particular section is already in the Act itself. But like she said, all what they are doing is to limit its application to residential properties, so that if you got a business or a shopping mall in the particular rural municipality or wherever it is which it will fall, it will have to be, it is 0.5 cents in a rent, you multiply it by the market value. So you can't come with the notion of you pay the rent of 50 rent. So that is one way which we need also to look at it. Thanks.
Members, are we continuing with the process of, because there's a fresh tea here, want to grab a cup of tea for 5 minutes then?
Just to make a point, that the responsibility given to me, I do not accept it. And I feel that the leading of blinkers on. They're not being open and clear-minded. They're not dealing with it properly.
Okay.
They've got blinkers on.
Members, we break for 5 minutes or we continue until we finish? Let's continue. Okay. They are proposing that let's continue.
The question that I want to respond to is just an addition to what the DG started with when we came to the responses, and it will directly perhaps go to the question that Honorable Machova raised. Honorable raised the question, why did the department fail to follow the procedure? It might be taken as if the department failed to follow the procedure. Meanwhile, at the disposal of the department, the procedure that we were having was that from the executing authority point of view, you submit to cabinet and then cabinet will approve for public participation, which we did in April 2011, after which we need to consider those inputs and submissions that were made by stakeholders, and then we again submitted back to the executing authority in June this particular year, after which it was our understanding that after cabinet has then done that approval, then we will being that committee of parliament. So that was the understanding of what we took as the procedure. So that is the one area that I wanted to mention. There is an area that Honorable Pome is raising around churches. We are aware of those kind of practices. Perhaps what we may need to indicate is that Veronica will know that when we deal with issues of public service infrastructure, especially when we were talking about airport aprons and runaways, we were not excluding the airport building where there are quite a number of other business activities, like you'll find that they are food shops that are operating. They are not necessarily excluded. Likewise, if you have a yard, where in the yard you have this area which is demarcated as where an area of worship, but at the back you might find that somebody is having a certain activity, it is still up to the municipality and the valuer when they look around that particular property, that the area of worship is this particular portion, but this other portion is meant for business processes, and then they will be able to do the devaluation accordingly. And I'm just presenting, Chair, that there are certain things that I think when the committee on behalf of Parliament goes close the door, the colleagues that are here are also going to be going and clarifying those close bases. We just felt that, as the DG had indicated when we started, that we are dealing now with just the broader overview of what the bill is all about. There is one question that Veronica will finalize with, which was asked by Honorable Buiname, around the question of whether the bill itself is considering that other people are paying for municipal services, and what consideration have we looked at when we look at, in fact, he was just saying we might be over charging residents. So if Veronica can deal with that.
Yes, before Veronica can cut in, I just want to go back in there. In terms of procedures and rules, we raised the issue of saying when I started outside the processes, it was the concern that we raised, of which we are in a correct route, but our concern was that we always raise the issue of that we are having constituencies whereby we need to participate in those public hearings. When it comes to Parliament, we know. If you can be a committee member, you hear things on TV, on radio, there are consultations, it's the procedure, it's correct procedure. But the P, it's the working relationship in terms of our constituencies. It's the correct procedure on your side. When coming to Parliament, Section 159 of the Joint Rules require that before the bill is tabled to the Speaker of Parliament, the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee need to be briefed so that it can be able to introduce the legislation in order to assist us in planning before it has been tabled. That is the Joint Rule of Section 159. That's the procedure that we're talking about, that it hasn't been done. We've just heard about the bill when it's referred to us. Hence, it has jumped the stage of Section 159.1 of Joint Parliament Rules.
Thank you, Jay. I'm going to respond to some of those issues that have not yet been responded to. Has this bill considered other service charges? I'm assuming we are talking about water and electricity and so forth. The bill itself does not propose any increases to property rates. I need to say that first of all. This bill, the contents of it are around some of the issues that we've discussed with you and other technical issues. It does not propose to increase the cent amount in the rand of on property. That is the municipality that determines that every year. The Act already says that. Therefore, for that reason, the interface with other service charges and their levels is not relevant to the bill per se. If this bill was increasing the cent amount in the rand or trying to get the cent amount in the rand to be increased for a certain reason, we would have to consider the overall expense around by a property owner around some of the other service charges. This bill doesn't do that. It deals with other issues like monitoring, it deals with property categories and so forth. There was a question asked around the consultation process that we undertook, which have been already discussed at length here, but we were asked about what kind of consultations did you have and who were the community-based organizations, for example. The way that we did the consultations is that we did it with provinces and we did it through provincial legislatures as well. We brought them in. We issued an invite for all persons who are interested in that specific province. We asked the province to work with us to issue the invite to invite all those persons. We also revisited the province because it and municipalities deal more with provincial stakeholders within the province, for each province, to engage those stakeholders so that they can come and engage with us on the Property Rights Act and what needs to be amended there, what they think needs to be amended. Now, despite the fact that an invite is issued, whoever presents themselves there, it is based on whether they see that or whether if they see it, they deem it fit for them to present themselves there. By community organizations, we are merely referring to, and these persons and organizations presented themselves to a public hearing. We're talking about civic organizations, and we're also talking about action groups specifically based in urban municipalities like provinces. I mean, in provinces where there are urban municipalities, in areas like townships, these civic action groups that engage municipalities and provinces around issues of rape and around issues of service charges and so forth. That's who we mean by community-based organizations. And we're saying this based on the fact of who actually presented themselves at those public hearings. I think, Chairperson, those are the issues. I think some of the issues that were asked around the older persons, grant recipients and all that have been responded to by me, so I won't touch on these issues. I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you. No, any responses?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is not a response. I just wish to comment. I noticed that my earlier intervention may have offended Honourable Member Steenhuisen. I would like him to be aware of the fact that I didn't mean to condescend over his understanding of his role as Member of Parliament. what I sought to indicate was that, and of course my comment was also not meant to curtail the engagement. What I was trying to point out was that at this stage of the process, with all the flaws that we've identified, we are no longer as the department in the position to amend what has already been approved by Cabinet. The committee may not be satisfied with the rationale, the reasons for certain proposals we have in the bill. We will explain them to the best that we can. But to the extent that the committee is either not persuaded or not satisfied with our explanations, they would be within their right as the committee, as Parliament, to change whatever we have in the bill. And that's what I was trying to convey. I didn't intend to say just otherwise, that any member of Parliament doesn't understand their role as an elected public representative. Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I should just clarify that. If I offended him, I apologize.
Madam Chair, I just want to go back to the Section 52 because I suspect it is going to form a lot of the public engagement. I'm sure it's going to come up again. And you know, the objects of the bill, we say we're trying to deal with the practical problems that we've learned from implementation. Now, you know, I understand that we want to create comfort and create a degree of comfort amongst residents, etc., that, you know, in the process. But there's a very real problem in terms of capacity to get people to sit on valuation boards. I mean, even metros are battling incredibly to get people, you know, to sit on the valuation boards. And I just wonder, have you guys done any modelling or investigation of what the current backlog is at valuation appeal boards around the country? Because I think it would be a very useful exercise. Because one of the practical problems with this 10% thing is that there are often errors. I mean, there is human input into evaluation role. There's data gatherers that go out and look at stuff. There's formulaic modelling that's done. And errors do creep in. And what's happening is that your appeals boards are being flooded with these things. There's massive backlogs. And residents can, you know, wait perhaps upwards of a year or more to have a very minor amount corrected. And, you know, and municipalities are saying it's hampering their ability as well to operate. And also it's clogging up the appeal board from listening to, you know, real, genuine, major appeals. And so, you know, I just wonder if there's no scope for us to have a re-look at this as a committee and review board, and perhaps get some input from municipalities, particularly metros. But I think it's important for this committee to know how many valuation appeal boards there are in the country, how they're constituted, and what the current backlog each of them is, because I think it'll start to paint a very clearer picture about the bottleneck that the section is causing.
My apologies. I think maybe that we will, that the department will take into consideration of those maybe issues out of the bill, but you need to acquaint us with more information behind the bill on the second time round of saying how many evaluation boards we're having, how many cases before the board. It's outside the privacy, but we need to have that information. Maybe in the second round of discussion of the bill, we'll ask you to bring us that information. In that note, members, if there are no any comments, I think I would like to thank the department for special PC. I know that you left your Limpopo function just to reduce your issues that you were supposed to receive this site. We appreciate that. We thank the hoping that we have more interaction in terms of the processes until the finalization of the bill. On our side, I think we still need to invite some stakeholders to conduct public hearings, advertise the bill in newspapers, and go through all those processes until the finalization of the bill. But we don't foresee that we finalize it this year. We've got a few weeks to revise, then I think we'll deal with it in the next step. Thanks, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.